From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. In a few moments, we'll take you out to the ball game. But first, a look at maps, the kind designed and printed centuries ago, maps that served as geographical, political, cultural, and even artistic records of their times. WUOT's Matt Schaefer-Powell peruses some of the roughly 200 historic maps that were recently donated to the University of Tennessee's McClung Museum collection.
I'm just flipping through here. We have so many maps. The first batch was all maps of Europe.
Lindsay Waugh and I are leaning over a table in a bunker-like room in the bowels of the McClung Museum. Scattered over the table are maps, some dating back to the late 1500s. It's easy to spend a lot of time just looking at them.
We look at the maps for the same reason that we go to a museum. We want to know about the world around us, and that tells us about ourselves in turn. I mean, I think the way that these represent not just a physical landscape, but also a cultural landscape as well, is why they're so fascinating.
Waugh is coordinator of academic programs at McClung. Part of her job is to show the maps to students and discuss the map's role in the development of the human experience. She tells them maps help make the invisible visible.
When we think about what time period these maps came from, they came from a similar time period as the invention of the microscope. And so in two very different scales, we have both the microscope and maps that are allowing people to really see the unseen.
Lindsay Waugh is an art historian by trade, so she loves the elaborate artistic depictions of cherubs, sailing ships, and native people on some of the earlier maps. But as you move through time toward the present, you notice the maps become more functional, less like a painting and more of a simple navigational aid. At this point, Waugh and I are looking at a map of New York State from the 1860s. It looks more like something you'd see in a modern atlas.
With the expansion and development of the United States, of course, having very accurate maps that are produced quickly and efficiently is going to help people understand the landscape, understand how to get around. So there is that cognitive shift happening where we see maps functioning as navigational aids more specifically.
This chronological parade gives us a glimpse into how we've changed over the last 400 years. On a practical level, we know what the North Pole looks like now, but we also know so much more about each other.
So I think that's really important to keep in mind and see the changes that are happening throughout the centuries that these maps were produced and have that be kind of an indication to us of how politics, society, certainly science, changes the way that we view the world around us. They change over time.
At times, the images on the early maps seem almost quaint. After all, today's maps are much more accurate, and we have access to GPS, Google Earth, and MapQuest. So, will future generations think of our much more precise perceptions of the physical and natural world as quaint?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the moment that we stop learning about the world in which we live in, we won't know what to do with ourselves. Technology, society is ever-changing.
And with the pace at which technology and society are changing, Waugh says it won't be another 400 years. For The Method, I'm Matt Schaefer-Powell.
The NCAA is a little concerned that there wasn't enough pop in college baseball last season. That is, teams weren't scoring enough runs, at least according to the powers that be. A group of researchers at Washington State University was tasked with finding out how to get more bang for the baseball buck. What they found was that lowering the height of those iconic red stitches on a baseball's surface could give a little extra lift. The changes went into effect this month. Washington State's Dr. Lloyd Smith was part of that NCAA research team.
It turns out we had a machine that we had developed for measuring bats. It's a laser that measures the circumference of the bat as you rotate it around. And we thought, you know, this would just be perfect for looking at balls and seeing how round they are and what their seam height was. So we were able to put these balls in this fixture and get a very accurate measure of the circumference of the ball and then use that to measure the seam height.
The difference between the old seams and the new seams is small, very small, 17 one-hundredths of an inch. Now, that's about the thickness of maybe two or three sheets of paper. To me, that doesn't sound like a huge difference. Explain to me what the difference is in 17/100ths of an inch.
Yeah, it was really surprising to me when we took these measurements how small it was. So when we took these measurements, I thought to myself, well, you know, clearly this can't make a difference. It turns out, however, that even though that difference is small, you can feel with your finger two balls that have a seam height that are different by 5/1000ths of an inch. You can actually feel that with your finger. So it is something that you can perceive, and it does have a measurable effect on how far the ball goes.
Okay, so let's assume that I'm a pretty good college hitter, and I take a good swing at this new lower stitch ball. How much further might we expect to see that ball go?
First of all, there's a lot of variation in the distance a ball travels. So when you look at a large number of balls and you compare that, on average, you'll see that these lower seam balls will travel about 20 feet further.
Well, see, that takes me to my next question. The reason for this switch to the new seams is in part to juice up the offense a little bit. In other words, to help teams score more runs. Now, how does the NCAA plan to measure whether or not these new seams are actually working toward that goal? How would you measure that? How would you know that?
Well, there's a number of things they do. First, there's just anecdotal information. What do they hear from people they know, coaches and players and fans, on how the game's working? They also track statistics in the game very closely throughout the year. So they'll be looking at offensive statistics, length of games, and see how those change throughout this season. And then at the end of the season, they'll compare that to other seasons and see how that stacks up.
Now, there's something that we should mention before we go here. Now, the news might be really good for batters. They're going to see some of those balls travel a little bit further, maybe some home runs, some doubles and triples. But that means it may not be such great news for pitchers. Some pitchers, in fact, rely on really good grips along those seam lines. And so there's a little bit of concern that college pitchers might have some trouble throwing these new balls if they're really relying on those stitch lines.
That's true. The ability of the pitcher to control where that ball's going is going to be diminished. So on that dimension, the pitcher may not like this ball. I think the positive here, though, is that this ball is much closer to what they would be throwing in the professional leagues. The minor and major league both use a flat seam ball. So I think if they're able to show that they can pitch with this ball, their prospects at the professional league will be much better.
Dr. Lloyd Smith investigates the science of sports with Washington State University. He was a member of a team that investigated the difference in old seams on baseballs, new seams on baseballs that will be used by NCAA college teams across the country this spring. Dr. Smith, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
That's The Method. You can listen to each of our past episodes at WUOT.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.